Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and thank you for joining us on the first edition of the new Africa Link program. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Stella Oneko.
And let's jump to our main stories of the day. Off the hook, South African prosecutors drop fraud charges on Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan.
I have decided to overrule the decision to prosecute Mr. Makhashula, Mr. Pillay and Minister Gordhan on the charges listed in the summonses.
Africa is emulating China's economic model.
I think the overall picture is positive for China, but it's not. There are also some concerns among citizens, among African citizens, that there are some areas that also China needs to tighten up.
And Africa Link is now not just radio, but social radio.
That's right. So we shall be monitoring what you're saying on social media and regarding the Gordhan saga in South Africa. But before that, let's listen to some of the news happening in Africa and around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. In the United States, Donald Trump's campaign manager has said the Republican candidate will not make the FBI's new email discovery the centerpiece of his campaign against Democrat rival Hillary Clinton. FBI Director James Comey has told Congress that investigators were examining whether newly discovered emails may be relevant to the dormant investigation of Clinton's use of private emails while Secretary of State. The trial of a Dutch lawmaker on hate speech charges has opened in his absence in Schiphol near Amsterdam. Geert Wilders is accused of insulting a racial group and inciting racial hatred after comments he made at an election rally about the number of Moroccans living in the Netherlands. Wilders' lawyer, Geert Jan Knoops, said his client thought the case belonged in the political arena.
One of his main arguments is that the charges which are laid against him should be actually tried, to put it that way, within the parliament and not before a court of law.
On the eve of a visit to China, Germany's economy minister Sigmar Gabriel has been voicing harsh criticism of his host's economic policy. The minister, who leaves for China this evening, urged Beijing to respect the rules of a market economy. Otherwise, free trade would be replaced by protectionism. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. South Africa's top prosecutor, Sean Abrahams, has announced that fraud charges against Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan and his co-accused will be dropped.
I am satisfied that Mr. Makhashula, Mr. Pillay and Minister Gordhan did not have the requisite intention to act unlawfully.
The prosecutor's remarks sent the rand currency racing to a near five-week high. Investors were worried that Gordhan, credited with bringing some stability to South African markets, would be removed from his job if prosecuted. Gordhan had previously described the charges against him as politically motivated. France has formally halted its peacekeeping mission in Central African Republic, but said this did not mean the end of military relations between the two countries. The closure of the mission was preceded by overnight clashes in the capital Bangui, in which 10 people were killed in the Muslim PK5 neighbourhood. Residents were continuing to flee the area on Monday, fearing further bloodshed. Vote counting in Sunday's referendum in Ivory Coast is expected to be completed by the end of today or Tuesday at the latest, according to the Electoral Commission. Voters were asked to decide the fate of constitutional changes, which President Alassane Ouattara says will help end years of unrest in the West African country. The changes, though, have alarmed the opposition, which is boycotting the referendum. Scuffles erupted at dozens of polling stations on Sunday while voting was underway. For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
Thank you, Mark, for those news. We kick off in South Africa now, where prosecutors have dropped fraud charges on Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan. He had been accused of unlawfully authorizing a pension payout to a tax executive while he was head of South Africa's Revenue Service, SARS. Opposition and critics of President Jacob Zuma claimed the fraud charges against Gordhan were politically driven because of his tough stance against corruption. From Johannesburg, Tuzo Kumalo reports.
Just 2 days before Finance Minister Gordhan appeared in court for fraud charges linked to an employee that he granted early retirement, NPA boss Sean Abrahams delivered the unexpected news on Monday.
I've given due regard to the representations and all submissions that were made to me, and I've ultimately made a decision.
I have decided to overrule the decision to prosecute Mr. Magashula, Mr. Pillay, and Minister Gordhan on the charges listed in the summonses. As such, I have directed the summonses to be withdrawn with immediate effect.
But Gordhan is not impressed, and so are his supporters. On several occasions, he insisted on his innocence, but the NPA went ahead to summon him in court. Some legal experts also warned the charges were baseless and that they are as a result of President Jacob Zuma's attempt to remove Gordhan from office, but the NPA ignored that as well. The entire ANC National Executive Committee members' announcement last week that they will attend court on Wednesday in support of Gordhan seemed to have been the final blow to NPA's case. However, the opposition is now pointing fingers at President Jacob Zuma. The Democratic Alliance wants Zuma to resign immediately. The Economic Freedom Fighters want all South Africans on Wednesday to get out and march against Zuma's rule. Legal expert and Freedom Under Law chairperson Johan Krikler says the NPA's actions reveals more than meets the eye.
I do believe that those involved in the undermining process have overreached themselves. I think it is now manifest, Joe and Joan citizen, that there are evil forces at work.
Political commentator Karima Brown says resigning is the only honourable thing that the NPA head Abrahams must do.
You cannot imagine that anyone in that organization will have any respect for him. Never mind what the politicians outside will say. Never mind what the South African public will say. His own staff.
Meanwhile, opposition parties that had planned a march Wednesday in support of Minister Gordhan's now aborted court appearance have vowed to continue their march, saying there is now proof that the state institutions are being abused by those in power.
Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg. And still to come, Africa is emulating China's model of economic development. But before that, if you thought hate speech only happens in Africa, think again. The hate speech trial of Dutch anti-Islam lawmaker Geert Wilders began on Monday outside Amsterdam, with the outspoken politician boycotting the proceedings. Wilders is accused of inciting racial hatred against Moroccans at a political rally in March 2014. He has, however, dismissed the case as a travesty, saying it is a politically motivated case. But DW's correspondent in Brussels, Terry Schulz, says the charges are very serious.
The comments are being taken very seriously because Wilders is a very prominent politician in the Netherlands. In fact, he is running just behind the current Prime Minister Mark Rutte in terms of popularity in the polling. And it's not the first time that he's been under fire for such remarks. He was acquitted of making comments that qualify as hate speech before.
Terry, what has been the impact on this case on the minorities like the Moroccans?
Well, I can certainly reflect on the impact on Moroccans in Belgium, as I just spoke with an activist in Antwerp, where there's a large Moroccan community. And he said that, of course, when Wilders speaks, it's in the same language in Dutch as they speak in Antwerp. And he said there's a huge ripple felt even here in Belgium. When he says that the Netherlands wants fewer Moroccans, that makes Moroccans feel unwelcome even next door here in Belgium. And in fact, he also said that many Moroccans have been leaving the Netherlands and moving to Belgium, which is also not usually seen as a welcoming sanctuary for minorities. The Wilders remarks, even if he is not found guilty of inciting violence or committing hate speech, it makes minorities like the Moroccan community in the Netherlands feel like it could incite violence against them, or at the very least, they're unwelcome. So I know that that minorities like the Moroccans are definitely watching to see what the courts are going to say, whether this was legally hate speech or not, what kind of societal impact his comments are going to have. Because let me just point this out, the Moroccan population in the Netherlands is only 2%. So for him to say that you need fewer Moroccans with a population that's so small certainly makes them feel targeted.
What implications also does this case have on free speech, not only in the Netherlands, but the European Union as a whole?
Well, I think we have to wait and see what the court says, because he was acquitted once when many people thought he was committing hate speech. Wilders himself says that this is not illegal, that he's the head of a political party and he should be allowed to vocalize what his followers are saying. On the other side, there are plenty of people who say that you should not be allowed to target minorities, you should not be allowed to target religious groups in your speech, and that that's not free speech, that that's hate speech.
DW's Brussels correspondent Terry Schulz. Looking east, more African countries are emulating China when it comes to growing and managing their economies. That's according to the latest report by Afrobarometer. The report says the United States is slightly ahead of China in terms of popularity and influence as a development model, but that China is quickly closing that gap. Christina Kripal has been talking to co-author of the report, Anyway Chingwete.
If you check the other question that we asked, in terms of what are the issues that would relate to China's influence being negative, citizens highlighted issues to do with quality of Chinese products. Also, some also mentioned issues to do with competition related to businesses and also jobs. And we also had a number that mentioned China's extraction of resources from Africa that is taking away, you know, I think that the aspect of competition. And about 7% mentioned issues of land grabbing. I think the overall picture is positive for China, but it's not. There are also some concerns among citizens, among African citizens, that there are some areas that also China needs to tighten up, and these are the issues that I'm actually highlighting. You know, Western countries want to understand how democratic the countries they want to engage in trade with, or and they would want to understand what's happening in this country. While China has always had this policy that we're not going to get involved in the internal affairs of the country that we are engaging with. And I think that has had a positive influence, that has had a positive effect in terms of the growth of trade relationships between China and most of the countries.
Co-author of the latest Afrobarometer report, Anyway Chingwete. You are listening to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Sela Oneko.
That's right, Sela. And let's go back to the top story. That's the fact that the South African Finance Minister, Pravin Gordhan, has had his fraud charges dropped. What are people saying about this story on social media?
Yes, I mean, there's been quite a lot of discussion about this on Twitter, and the name Sean Abrahams was trending as a hashtag the whole morning. Sean Abrahams, if we remember, was the prosecutor on this case who dropped the charges. And there were some comments from journalists and commentators, for example, from the Africa correspondent from The Globe and The Mail, Jeffrey York, who said, really feeling sorry for Sean Abrahams now. He's like a deer in the headlights as media accuse him of damaging the economy and NPA credibility. Or there was, for example, a South African prominent writer and columnist who said, is Sean Abrahams going to apply to retire early and then get a contract as a legal advisor to the Pension and Authority Fund? So those are the kind of comments that we've been hearing from the media itself.
And I also understand that there are also some African South African politicians that have been commenting.
Exactly. I mean, there's Julius Malema from the Economic Freedom Fighters Party, who basically announced that they're going to protest on the 2nd of November and to demand Sean Abrahams to resign. And of course, again, Zuma to fall. Zuma must fall, the hashtag, which has been trending for quite a long time. But there are also quite a lot of people who have been saying that Abraham should have stood his ground, and that they're comparing him to sheep, you know, that animated cartoon character, Shaun the Sheep. And so there are lots of kind of woolly sheep bobbing up and down on Twitter, and lots of photos like that being shared.
Right. So for all of you out there, just to let you know that we are now on Facebook. Africa Link now has the DW Africa Facebook, and we welcome your thoughts and we welcome your opinions. So let's get the debate going. You're listening to Africa Link. And coming up in the next 15 minutes here on Africa Link, the African Union Peace and Security Council is visiting South Sudan.
And we're looking at Kenyans and what they're saying about a health scandal that's been on social media the last few days.
Plus, Malawi's Council of Churches backs a bill supporting abortion. But we begin in South Sudan, where the African Union has called on warring parties to use dialogue as a way of ending the country's conflict. The remarks were made on Monday by an AU Peace and Security Council delegation after they concluded their visit to the country. Wake Wudu-Simon reports.
The visit by the team comes amid deteriorating security and economic situation across the country. It's the first AU Peace and Security Council team visit to the country since violence erupted again in the capital, Juba, and deposit former First Vice President and rebel leader Riek Machar back in exile. Catherine Muigai Mwangi, the Kenyan ambassador to the AU who led the delegation, says the visit is aimed at gathering first-hand information on the political, security and the humanitarian challenges facing the newest African nation.
Our final word is really to urge every single South Sudanese to agree to peace, to agree to dialogue, so that finally your country can start on the road to recovery, to a reconciled country and to a prosperous South Sudan.
Violence has continued to flare up even in southern parts of the country that had never experienced the conflict when the fighting broke out in late 2013, killing several more people and displacing many to neighboring countries. According to the UN Refugee Agency report released last month, the number of South Sudanese refugees that have now fled the violence to the neighboring countries of Uganda, Sudan, and Kenya, among others, has exceeded 1 million. The UN blames the renewed and unceasing violence. Although Mwangi and her team did not share some of the findings in the three-day visit to the country, in her brief press conference held in Juba this afternoon, she says the team's mission has been accomplished.
As we leave Juba today, we have a better understanding of what the challenges are that are facing this country, especially the implementation of the peace agreement.
The visit of the team is an implementation of the African Union resolution on South Sudan passed at the AU Assembly held in the Rwandan capital, Kigali, in July this year. At the time, the Assembly urged the AU Peace and Security Council to pay a visit to South Sudan and make necessary findings on the deteriorating situation in the country. As efforts to acquaint itself better with information, Mwangi says her team had several meetings with the senior government officials, including President Salva Kiir, members of the SPLM-AIO led by the first vice president Taban Dengai, and religious leaders, adding the team also traveled to Malakal, one of the worst conflict-devastated regions. The team's visit is part of several other human rights activist groups, including that of the United Nations, that have so far visited South Sudan to investigate rights abuses committed by both parties to the conflict.
Wake Wudu-Simon reporting in Nairobi.
Health check.
Let's move on to Malawi, where the Council of Churches, MCC, has backed an amendment of the abortion law. The church now says an abortion is permissible only if the pregnancy becomes a threat to a woman's health, if it is a result of rape, incest or defilement, or where there is severe malformation of the fetus. MCC is Malawi's largest grouping of churches and represents Catholics and Protestants. George Muhango reports.
The Malawi Council of Churches supports the change because of what it says are high numbers of women dying in an attempt to abort pregnancies through unsafe procedures. This is welcome news to 24-year-old Mary Bisika.
Most women who are raped or impregnated will have a choice whether to keep the pregnancy or not. It is painful to sometimes skip the pregnancy when you don't know the man or that man is on the run. Such laws will be necessary.
Abortion is illegal in Malawi under the penal code, but a surgery to save a mother's life is allowed if carried out by a professional. However, health studies show that thousands of Malawian women are treated for complications annually from unsafe procedures. The use of contraception is also prohibited, and this means that more young women are likely to have unwanted pregnancies. Chief Chikumbu from Mulanje backs the idea of making contraception accessible to women.
As Chikumbu, what I want is that health officials should be allowed to abort pregnancies when the girl's life is in danger. We need to have proper laws on the matter. Currently, most women go to traditional healers to abort pregnancies, and some die in the process.
Dr. Bonongwe from the Queen Elizabeth Central Hospital in Blantyre also believes new laws are needed.
Okay, when we look at our acute gynecological admissions, about half of those patients who come with acute problems in the gyne ward are due to complications of miscarriage. About 30 to 40% of those patients are due to induced unsafe abortions.
Chief Lukwa of the Chewa tribe said there is need to criminalize men who deny responsibility.
It's time for us to change our laws to help our women and girls. I feel the time has come to have laws that punish men for impregnating young girls. The laws have to be changed to be in line with the changing times, because for long, women have been marginalized.
Basic post-abortion care is estimated to cost about 8,500 Malawi kwacha, or $23 per case. But more severe cases requiring a blood transfusion, treatment or sepsis, or surgical repair of the reproductive tract can increase costs dramatically.
George Mhango reporting. Let's remain with the church, because today the Protestants are marking 500 years since Martin Luther penned his 95 Theses in Wittenberg. This simple act would later lead to the Reformation and the breaking up of the Roman Catholic Church. Today there are 800 million Protestants in the world, 20 million of those in Africa. Daniel Peltz reports on how Germany is marking the event.
The celebrations kicked off with a special service at Berlin's Marienkirche. In his sermon, the head of Germany's United Protestant Church, Heinrich Bedford Strom, said that the year of celebration should send a signal of reconciliation and change. Representatives from Germany's Catholic and Orthodox churches were in attendance as well. A special service also took place in Wittenberg, where Martin Luther started his campaign for a reform of the Catholic Church, which led to the birth of Protestantism. Federal President Joachim Gauck, a former Protestant pastor, will address an official state reception at Berlin's Concert Hall in the evening.
Daniel Pels in Berlin. Time now to take a look at sports, and to discuss that with me is DW's sports editor Chuck Penfold.
Yes, Crispin, indeed. The man you're referring to is Anthony Modeste. Cologne's French striker found the back of the net three times for the hat-trick on Sunday as Cologne beat lowly Hamburg 3-0 at home. Modeste is really flying high at the moment. He's the Bundesliga's top scorer with 11 goals. That's 11 of Cologne's 16 goals in the first nine matches of the season. So he's a huge reason that they find themselves fourth place in the standings.
Well, good for him. We'll keep monitoring the Bundesliga and see how he performs as the league continues. Now, there was also this Ruhr derby between arch rivals Borussia Dortmund and Schalke, which was played on Saturday but ended in a goalless draw. Did that game meet up to the expectations?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think it depends on your perspective. Of course, you're always a little disappointed if there wasn't a goal, but you always knew this was going to be a very hard-fought game. There were a lot of hard tackles, some of them sort of last-ditch tackles to prevent scoring chances. So it was very intense. Schalke probably having the upper hand in the first half. Then Dortmund came back in the second half. Of course, they were at home to make a real major push, but nobody was able to score. Mario Götze, who of course returned to Dortmund from Bayern this season, was pretty much looking looking like his old self, had probably the best chance of the match, but was stopped by Ralf Fährmann in the Schalke goal. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who has had 7 goals so far this campaign, didn't have a great game. He hit the side netting on the best chance he had near the end. So Schalke maybe a little more happy with this one because they got the point away from home. Dortmund maybe not so much.
And then the Bundesliga leaders Bayern Munich beat FC Augsburg 3-1 with a brace from Polish striker Robert Lewandowski. He had been struggling in the last games, but do you think that with these 2 goals that he's now put all this behind him?
Yeah, you know, he sure had been struggling. By the time he scored that first goal, it had been 480 minutes without a goal, so that's quite a spell for him. He not only got a second goal in the day, but he also set one up for Ian Robin. Those two look to be in perfect harmony, and I think he probably is back to his old self. We'll have to wait for a couple of games to know for sure, but I think these couple of goals have given him confidence, and we know how important confidence is to a striker.
And then in other news, we just learned that the German national trainer Joachim Löw has just extended his contract with the national team. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, sure. We sort of heard the story. It came out on the mass circulation Bild-Zeitung, Bild newspaper, late last week. So it wasn't really a surprise when it happened today. But they held a press conference, made it official. Joachim Löw has signed a 2-year extension. This means that instead of his contract expiring after the 2018 World Cup in Russia, it now runs through the 2020 European Championship, which will include games in Munich.
DW's sports editor, Chuck Penfold.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.com/AfricaLink. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations. Send us your feedback in a text message and sign up for our newsletter, dw.com/AfricaLink.
Now we go back to social media and Sela.
Yes, one big topic that's been discussed on social media today is the topic of health and corruption in Kenya. And Kenyans have always been, they're always very big and vocal on their topics in, on Twitter. And the topic is that an official audit by the National Treasury in Kenya uncovered that 5 billion Kenyan shillings have gone missing from the from Kenya's Ministry of Health. That's about $49 million.
Yes, and while the Cabinet Secretary for Health has denied these claims, the opposition is calling on the government to break the silence about this. And Kenyans on Twitter, I understand, have been very, very vocal on this too.
Exactly. There were lots of pictures going around of containers which were apparently meant to be mobile health clinics, but they've been sitting in Mombasa for several months now. And so a parody account of William Ruto, which is Kenya's vice president, wrote, "Just like the wheelbarrows, these containers have special features and specification. Hashtag Ministry of Health Facts." And there are other people like Charles Mwabili who said, "The container that costs 40,000 locally was imported for 10 million from China. We can make local containers more cheaply, can't we? Ministry of Health Facts." And another picture that's been shared a lot is one by Chris the Monk, which shows that if you laid out 5 billion shillings in 1,000 shilling notes, you could pave a way all the way from Mombasa to Kisumu on the other side of the country. Now, I don't know if that's actually true, but it's a nice comparison, and it's going around a lot on Kenyan social media.
Exactly. Now, we didn't check all of that, but it's an interesting comparison. So, Sela, are those all coming up on our social media news?
No, those are actually coming up on Twitter mainly. We've had a couple of questions on our new show and on DW Africa, our new Facebook page, and which not on that topic, but on but basically on what we're doing and what's new about the show and so on. And there was Sean Hickey from the US who wrote, "I love listening to Africa Link from the US, and I'm wondering, is this a correct page, and is in and can I listen to the demand on the DW page anymore?" And I mean, because he's basically been missing the podcast from last weekend, which would have been live this morning otherwise.
Well, Sean, if you're listening, then you're definitely on the right page for all of DW's Africa content. And you know that we are on air at 16 hours UTC. And the podcast will also be available as usual on our website. That's dw.com/Africa very, very shortly. And also just to inform the listener that we've just had a very, very interesting interview with Godfrey Mwampemba, or his well, popularly known as Gado in Kenya, a very prominent cartoonist. And he's been talking about the corruption, the political situation, not just in Kenya, but also in the region. So very, very interesting. And keep it Africa Link, because we'll be having more of those coming up.
Yes, and you can also see some cartoons from him on our Facebook page, perhaps tomorrow. So keep an eye there.
Exactly. Just join DW Africa page. We are now on Facebook. You can share your comments, your thoughts of what you think on the stories that we have aired as well. You know, bring in your suggestions on what you'd like to hear on Africa Link. We are very open and we like to have a debate with you on air and on social media as well. Thank you for listening to DW. I've been Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Stella Oneko.
Until next time, bye-bye.